Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the best podcast that has ever existed. clearly, if you listen to yesterday's one, you'll know that that's true. Now, I do, as usual, as is the kind of standard start to an episode now, I apologize for yesterday's episode. Book's starting to frustrate me. Well, you know, that's an understatement. It's been frustrating me for a couple of months now, and you guys know that. And so sometimes it just gets the better of me, and I get in a bad mood. Yesterday was one of those days. Today we're talking about chapter 4 of book 11, which was a long chapter, which was probably why I was such in a bad mood. And it was another one of those chapters that just was very, for my money, very poorly written. I just couldn't absorb anything that was happening. So it was like just 11 pages of just gibberish. The question that I asked was 11 pages, zero meaning. Sorry guys, this book might as well be written in a foreign language at this point. Because yeah, like I said, nothing came in. So nothing sunk in, I should say, into my brain. J-Mama said, okay, I have a couple of questions. One, in order to resolve this question, one first has to align one's personality in opposition to one's actuality. Do you understand that? Mr. asks Ayosha. Do we understand what he means here in context of the situation or in general? Question 2. Perhaps my favourite passage in the book pertains to Mitya asking Grushenka's forgiveness. I couldn't help but feel that Dostoy's own relationship problems of the past scream through the ages. I could definitely relate to in a comical, stereotypical sort of way. It seems some things never change. And third question, do you think Mitya will make a run for it? Will Alyosha advise this? Oh yeah, he was talking about doing a breakout, right? I am a Norwegian, so I hope he makes a run for it. Hope he runs away. I also hope that Alyosha, believing Dmitri to be innocent and the court biased against him, doesn't try to get Dmitri to stay. If he goes to prison, an innocent man, he is bearing someone else's cross and not his own.
That's true.
Well, if he's innocent, I hope he escapes. But I guess I've got to wait and see if he's found guilty or not, and also whether or not he is guilty. Those are two different things, I suppose, eh? He might be innocent but found guilty, and in which case I do hope he escapes. What was the other question? Oh, what did he mean by that weird phrase? In order to resolve this question, one first has to align one's personality in opposition to one's actuality. I suppose it's just to say that there's a nature to people where they self-sabotage is one thing they might do, or they negate themselves, they contradict themselves, and there's a certain level of cognitive dissonance that allows us to do these things without even really acknowledging that we are contradicting ourselves, or even acting against our own best interest. Or, yeah, there's two sides to people sometimes. They can be completely on different sides of the same argument and still be a whole person. So, I think that's probably what he's getting at there. I am Norwegian said, Rakitin wants to write an article about Dmitri. I was wondering why he was visiting Mitya so much. But that makes complete sense. Rakitin wants to portray Dmitri as a victim of society. Dmitri himself wants to redeem himself in the suffering of his sentence. We're back to the theological debate that happened right before Dmitri met Zosima for the first time about the mechanical exclusion of men from society. Pasi and Zosima retorted that it was only the faith and resulting conscience that could bring these men back. It was also said that without this, the criminal would be alienated from society and would turn against it, blaming it for his own crimes, which is seemingly what Rakitin is inadvertently making reality by pushing the Dmitri as a victim society angle. Funnily enough, Rakitin is somewhat correct if Smerdy is truly the murderer. Then Dmitri goes on to wonder if he's, and the rest of us, just meat and flesh without a soul. That's why he brings up the scientist and starts an awkward explanation of nerves and how our eyes work. He is still struggling with his belief in faith, especially after being exposed to Rakitin. He's being pulled between atheism, Christianity, and relativism. His struggle is strangely relatable in a sort of I just discovered philosophy kind of way. Yeah, it is just like, it's so teenagery. Like, this rudiment of philosophy and, I don't know. At the end of the chapter, Mitchell reveals that Ivan has arranged an escape, but Dmitri isn't sure if he should run away. Ivan has 10,000 rubles for the escape and 20,000 rubles for America. That's a stupid amount of money, considering the whole plot has been pivoting around 3,000 rubles for a while now. Where did it all come from? Techrific says, good question. All this hullabaloo and dosto by Ivan proxy dos ex machina, deus ex machina, sorry, us all with all this cash to save Mitcha. What the actual F? And the teaching moment here is that Mitcha is supposed to resist the temptation of fleeing. I mean, I'm dumbfounded. I am Norwegian said, I don't think that is going to be the lesson here, or at least I hope not. Techrific said, I don't know, I'm confused. Did anyone else notice that the little viper, Rakitin, has been visiting Mitcha and is even on a short list of people allowed to see him at any time? He sure gets around, spreading his venom to Kolya, Mitcha, Madame Kolkov. Who else is he trying to influence? I'm Norwegian said, yeah, he's strangely omnipresent. It seems like he's thinking about this event as the springboard to his own career in print. He's just a little journalist, isn't he? Opportunistic. Tekrovic said, yes, I think he is. He must have made some journalist friends when he gossiped about Mitcha and Madame Kolokov to them. Man of the cloth, more like man of the rags. Uncle Josimer said, after Madame Kolokov ended with Rakitin's dreams of becoming rich, he embraces Mitch's misfortunes to make some profit out of it. Ivan is not planning to sit idly by. He is scheming Mitch's escape. Mitcha is haunted by his dream. He feels compassion for an imaginary kid. Maybe the kid is himself. He needs to recover his perennial essence, rescue himself, as Christ said to Nicodemus and Socrates to Theseus. In order to enter the kingdom of God, to acquire knowledge, you need to be born again. Perhaps he thinks he will achieve that by going to Siberia. Claude Bernard was a French physiologist, contemporary of Louis Pasteur. He saw that the human being as the outcome of a physiological and biochemical process that has a balanced relationship with his environment at a cellular level. He stated that just the experimental method and the observable reality was the only authority in science, not traditional theories accepted by big names. Some addition and special effects. Laura Weistich said, that short subplot about Rakitin and Madame Holokov was great. This poem was terrible. His poem was terrible. Although it rhymed in English, which I find strange. Right? Did they rewrite it in a way to make it rhyme in English? How do they translate a poem into another language and keep the meaning of the poem but also have it rhyme? I'm always so interested by that. How do they do that? Anyway, let's read chapter 5. Not You, Not You, it's called. Oh, look at that. Even the name of this title is already repetitive. On the way to Ivan, he had to pass the house where Katerina Ivanovna was living. There was light in the windows. He suddenly stopped and resolved. Who? Why does he do this thing where he starts a chapter without telling you who he's talking about? Okay, at the end of the last chapter, we were seeing things third person through Mitcha. No. Alyosha, okay, so. On the way to Ivan, he had to pass the house where Katerina Ivanovna was living. That little process there where I had to skim back through the previous chapter is exactly why you don't start a chapter without referring to who you're talking about. And the dumbest thing is that in the next few paragraphs, I bet he'll say Alyosha. Like, said Alyosha or something like that. So I don't know why you can't just do it in the opening sentence. On the way to Ivan, he had to pass the house where Katerina Ivanovna was living. There was light in the windows. He suddenly stopped and resolved to go in. He had not seen Katerina Ivanovna for more than a week, but now, it struck him that Ivan might be with her, especially on the eve of the terrible day. Ringing and mounting the staircase, which was dimly lighted by a Chinese lantern, he saw a man coming down, and as they met, he recognized him as his brother. So he was just coming from Katerina Ivanovna. "Ah, it's only you," said Ivan dryly. "Well, goodbye. You are going to her?" "Yes. I don't advise you to. She's upset, and you'll upset her more." A door was instantly flung open above, and a voice cried suddenly, "No, no, Alexei Fyodorovich, have you come from him?" "Yes, I have been with him." "Has he sent any message? Come up, Alyosha, and you, Ivan, you must come back. You must, do you hear?" There was such a peremptory note in Katya's voice that Ivan, after a moment's hesitation, made up his mind to go back with Alyosha. "She was listening," he murmured angrily to himself, but Alyosha heard it. "Excuse my keeping my great coat on," said Ivan, going into the drawing room. "I won't sit down. I won't stay more than a minute." "Sit down, Alexei Fyodorovich," said Katerina Ivanovna, though she remained standing. She had changed very little during this time, but there was an ominous gleam in her dark eyes. Alyosha remembered afterwards that she had struck him as particularly handsome at that moment. What did he ask you to tell me?" "Only one thing," said Alyosha, looking her straight in the face, "that you would spare yourself and say nothing at the trial of what," he was a little confused, "passed between you at the time of your first acquaintance in that town." "Ah, that I bowed down to the ground for that money," she broke into a bitter laugh. "Why, is he afraid for me or for himself? He asks me to spare whom? Him or myself? Tell me, Alexei Fyodorovich." Alyosha watched her intently, trying to understand her. "Both yourself and him," he answered softly. "I'm glad to hear it," she snapped out maliciously, and she suddenly blushed. "You don't know me yet, Alexei Fyodorovich," she said menacingly, "and I don't know myself yet. Perhaps you want to trample me underfoot after my examination tomorrow." "You will give your evidence honourably," said Alyosha. "That's all that's wanted." "Women are often dishonourable," she snarled. "Only an hour ago I was thinking I felt afraid to touch that monster as though he were a reptile, but no, he is still a human being to me." "But did he do it? Is he the murderer?" she cried, all of a sudden hysterically turning quickly to Ivan. Alyosha saw at once that she had asked Ivan that question before, perhaps only a moment before he came in, and not for the first time, but for the hundredth, and that they had entered by quarrelling. "I've been to see Smerdyakov. It was you who persuaded me that he murdered his father." "It's only you, I believe," she continued, still addressing Ivan. He gave her a sort of strained smile. Alyosha started at her tone. He had not suspected such familiar intimacy between them. "Well, that's enough anyway," Ivan cut short the conversation. "I am going. I'll come tomorrow." And turning at once, he walked out of the room and went straight downstairs. With an imperious gesture, Katerina Ivanovna seized Alyosha by both hands. "Follow him. Overtake him. Don't let him leave for a minute," she said in a hurried whisper. "He's mad. Don't you know that he's mad? He's in a fever, a nervous fever. The doctor told me so. Go run after him." Alyosha jumped up and ran after Ivan, who was not 50 paces ahead of him. "What do you want?" He turned quickly on Alyosha, seeing that he was running after him. "She told you to catch me up because I'm mad. I know it all by heart," he said irritably. "She is mistaken, of course, but she is right that you are ill," said Alyosha. "I was looking at your face just now. You look very ill, Ivan." Ivan walked on without stopping. Alyosha followed him. "And do you know, Alexei Fyodorovich, how people go out of their minds?" Ivan asked in a voice suddenly quiet, without a trace of irritation, with a note of the simplest curiosity. "No, I don't. I suppose there are all kinds of insanity. And can one observe that one's going mad oneself? I imagine one can see oneself clearly in such circumstances," Alyosha answered with surprise. Ivan paused for half a minute. "If you want to talk to me, please change the subject," he said suddenly. "Oh, while I think of it, I have a letter for you," said Alyosha timidly, and he took Lisa's note from his pocket and held it out to Ivan. They were just under a lamp post. Ivan recognized the handwriting at once. "Ah, from that little demon," he laughed maliciously, and without opening the envelope, he tore it into bits and threw it in the air. The bits were scattered by the wind. "She's not 16 yet, I believe, and already offering herself," he said contemptuously, striding along the street again. "How do you mean, offering herself?" exclaimed Alyosha. "As wanton women offer themselves, to be sure." "How can you, Ivan? How can you, Ivan?" Alyosha cried warmly in a grieved voice. "She is a child. You are insulting a child. She is ill. She is very ill, too. She is on the verge of insanity, too. Perhaps I hoped to hear something from you that would save her." "You'll hear nothing from me. If she is a child, I am not her nurse. Be quiet, Alexei. Don't go on about her. I am not even thinking about it." They were silent again for a moment. "She will be praying all night now to the Mother of God to show her how to act tomorrow at the trial, he said sharply and angrily again. You mean Katerina Ivanovna? Yes. Whether she's to save Mitya or ruin him, she'll pray for light from above. She can't make her mind up for herself, you see. She has not had time to decide yet. She takes me for her nurse. She wants me to sing lullabies to her. Katerina Ivanovna loves you, brother, said Alyosha sadly. Perhaps, but I am not very keen on her. She's suffering. Why do you sometimes say things to her that give her hope? Alyosha went on with timid reproach. I know that you've given her hope. Forgive me for speaking to you like this, he added. I can't behave to her as I ought. Break off altogether and tell her so straight, said Ivan irritably. I must wait till sentence is passed on the murderer. If I break off with her now, she will avenge herself on me by ruining that scoundrel tomorrow at the trial, for she hates him and knows she hates him. It's all a lie, lie upon lie. As long as I don't break off with her, she goes on hoping. And she won't ruin that monster, knowing how I want to get him out of trouble. If only that damned verdict would come. The words murderer and monster echoed painfully in Alyosha's heart. But how can she ruin Mitya? He asked, pondering on Ivan's words. What evidence can she give that would ruin Mitya? You don't know that yet. She's got a document in her hands, in Mitch's own writing, that proves conclusively that he did murder Fyodor Pavlovich. That's impossible, cried Alyosha. Why is it impossible? I've read it myself. There can't be such a document, Alyosha repeated warmly. There can't be, because he's not the murderer. And if he's... It's not he murdered father, not he. Ivan suddenly stopped. Who is the murderer, then, according to you? He asked, with apparent coldness. There was even a supercilious note in his voice. You know who, Alyosha pronounced in a low, penetrating voice. Who? You mean the myth about the crazy idiot, the epileptic Smerdyakov? Alyosha suddenly felt himself trembling all over. You know who, broke helplessly from him. He could scarcely breathe. Who? Ivan cried, almost fiercely. All his restraint suddenly vanished. I only know one thing, Alyosha went on, still almost in a whisper. It wasn't you who killed father. Not you? What do you mean by not you? Ivan was thunderstruck. It was not you killed father, not you, Alyosha repeated firmly. The silence lasted for half a minute. I know I didn't. Are you raving? Said Ivan, with a pale, distorted smile. His eyes were riveted on Alyosha. They were standing again under a lamppost. No, Ivan, you've told yourself several times that you are not the murderer. When did I say so? I was in Moscow. When have I said so? Ivan faltered helplessly. You've said so to yourself many times when you've been alone during these two dreadful months, Alyosha went on softly and distinctly as before. Yet he was speaking now, as it were, not of himself, not of his own will, but obeying some irresistible command. You have accused yourself and have confessed to yourself that you are the murderer and no one else. But you didn't do it. You are mistaken. You are not the murderer, do you hear? It was not you. God has sent me to tell you. They were both silent. The silence lasted a whole long minute. They were both standing still, gazing into each other's eyes. They were both pale. Suddenly Ivan began trembling all over and clutched Alyosha's shoulder. You've been in my room, he whispered hoarsely. You've been there at night when he came. Confess, have you seen him? Whom do you mean, Mitya? Mitya? Alyosha asked, bewildered. Not him, damn the monster, Ivan shouted in a frenzy. Do you know that he visits me? How did you find out? Speak. Who is he? I don't know whom you are talking about, Alyosha faltered, beginning to be alarmed. Yes, you do know, or how could you? It's impossible that you don't know. Suddenly he seemed to check himself. He stood still and seemed to reflect. A strange grin contorted his lips. Brother Alyosha began again in a shaking voice. I have said this to you because you will believe my word. I know that. I tell you once and for all, it's not you. You hear, once and for all, God has put it in my heart to say this to you. Even though it may make you hate me from this hour, but by now Ivan had apparently regained self-control. Alexei Fyodorovich, he said with a cold smile, I can endure prophets and epileptics, messages from God especially, and you know that only too well. I break off all relations with you from this moment and probably forever. I beg you to leave me at this turning. It's the way to your lodgings, too. You'd better be particularly careful not to come to me today, do you hear? He turned and walked on with a firm step, not looking back. Brother, Alyosha called after him, if anything happens to you today, turn to me before anyone. But Ivan made no reply. Alyosha stood under the lamppost at the crossroads till Ivan had vanished into the darkness. Then he turned and slowly walked slowly homewards. Both Alyosha and Ivan were living in the lodgings. Neither of them was willing to live in Fyodor Pavlovich's empty house. Alyosha had a furnished room in the house of some working people. Ivan lived some distance from him. He had taken a roomy and fairly comfortable lodge attached to a fine house that belonged to a well-to-do lady, the widow of an official. But his only attendant was a deaf and rheumatic old crone who went to bed at 6 o'clock every evening and got up at 6 in the morning. Ivan had become remarkably indifferent to his comforts of late, and very fond of being alone. He did everything for himself in the one room he lived in, and rarely entered any of the other rooms in his abode. He reached the gate of the house and had his hand on the bell when he suddenly stopped. He felt that he was trembling all over with anger. Suddenly he let go of the bell, turned back with a curse, and walked with rapid steps in the opposite direction. He walked a mile and a half to a tiny slanting wooden house, almost a hut, where Maya Kondratyevna, the neighbour who used to come to Fyodor Pavlovich's kitchen for soup and to whom Smerdyakov had once sung his songs and played on the guitar, was now lodging. She had sold their little house and was now living here with her mother. Smerdyakov, who was ill, almost dying, had been with them ever since Fyodor Pavlovich's death. It was to him Ivan was going now, drawn by a sudden and irresistible prompting. Alright, there we go, another chapter down. Intriguing and also not that intriguing. Like, Dosto has done that kind of frustrating thing they sometimes do in, like, mystery books and stuff where, like, there's just a conversation where it becomes apparent that they're purposely not mentioning certain names because they don't want the reader to know those names. And so they're like tantalizing us with like hints at things, but then not really like going into any detail. It's very frustrating. It's kind of a cheap trick, you know, a bit of a low blow that authors do. which, I mean, I get it. Like, they don't want to spoil the mystery. But it's also like, why are these characters trying not to spoil the mystery in their dialogue to us? Like, as if there's an audience and they're like, don't let the audience know. Seems a little bit contrived. Contrived. It's a good word for this entire novel, actually. Anyway, that's it for today. Have your say over at reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. Thank you for listening today. I'll see you tomorrow.